American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with the capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is good day! Sean Kennedy reporting from the Internet for Monday, December the 21st, 2009. And you're listening to Newsreel, a WOG Global sit-rep on current political tyranny, technology, and trends for your headspace and timing. Rant Media is taking a stand for free speech today, and just by listening and distributing this program, you are too. You can follow up on all these news stories, and you can check my facts by going to my live journal. And you can get there by going to Sean_Kennedy.livejournal.com. This would be the free podcast that can be heard on Rant Radio Talk, Red Mercury SE, SRN1, Wild Bunch Radio, KJAG Radio, Osprey Networks, Creek Radio, iTunes, Podcast.com, Podcast Alley, Second Life Node, Archer's Grid, 15574666. And let's not forget that we are, in fact, broadcasting right now. And if you were crazy enough to attend the solo show, you would be sitting in here with Tia, Sporadic E, Smurf, Sejin, Richard A, Prosium, Nomad, Napalm, Morps, Mindy, Mephit, Legion, Roseman, K, Jitter, Jeeper, Heavy, Flash, Dewey, El Ross, Dragon, DJ Dally, Devon, Darion Lacombe, Don Dorman, Darion Lacombe, and then Blood Brilliant, sorry, your name was Bloody Brilliant, whose name was obscured there for a second, sorry, Basharad, Anthony, and Anastasia. So, good to see you all. Thanks for showing up in the show. And if you've never actually tried Second Life, I gotta say, even though the barrier to entry on Second Life is kind of high, because you download this program, and it's kind of a big bag of suck. You know, it's hard to figure out. You gotta do this sort of stuff to figure it out. But you know what? You learn it. There's a lot of really friendly people in Second Life. You can come to the show, check it out. You show up here, they have like a complete support base to give you a wonderful monkey for your back, and you can become addicted to the internet just like everybody else. So you know what? If RL has got you down, the graphics are great, but the plot sucks ass, hey, come on into Second Life, because we've got a pretty good, the chicks are all hot, everybody looks like what they want to, and you can do whatever you like. So, you know, really, if you're in a country where most things are legal, unlike Australia, who doesn't even allow Second Life, but that's okay, we forgive them. If they would let us back in there, we'd be okay with that too. But I'm just saying, you know, you should check out Second Life, because it's kind of an interesting thing, and the people you meet there have to be fairly technically apt, otherwise they wouldn't be on, you know, in Second Life. You know what I mean? It's like if you go to a Dungeons & Dragons convention, you're probably not going to meet supermodels, and there's a reason for that. It's not because supermodels, you know, are not smart. It's because they just generally don't like Dungeons & Dragons. There are a few that do. Never met any, but I'm sure they're out there. And, don't pop my bubble. You know, and why not? Why not? We can have the Roman Catholic Church. We can have supermodels playing Dungeons & Dragons. Come on. It's fair. It's fair. Let's get into some feedback. Because I have no co-host. No co-host. You know what that means? That means I have to talk a lot. And it's hard to, you know, it's like they do that. They'll do that in a prison. They'll put you in a prison, and then they'll put you in a cell with a guy you don't even like, and then they'll take the guy away, and they'll try to, like, beat you. And that's, like, the brutality of doing a newscast. Because you do it every day, and you're the only guy there for, like, a couple of years. Then your buddy shows up, and he's like, hey, I'm totally gonna, like, you know, just hang out. And it's kind of fun, and then you're left to do the show again. And you have to remember how to do it all singularly, which is why it's very, very important that we all label Sim Tazor. That bastard is going to totally get labeled for this. I want him to be painted with as wide a brush as I can with that Tazor thing. I think it's the best name ever. So far, it's been going really good. So far, it's been going really good. He's getting some mail. It's pissing him off, you know. But really, I'm sure that over time, we can break down his will You know, I mean, he kind of thrives on the adversity. I don't think, he says he doesn't, but I don't think if people ripped on him about being vegan, he'd really care about being vegan, you know? So I think he likes the adversity. So, you know, if we were to be like, Taser, I am not Taser, don't call me that. It's like calling Cobra Commander, or calling, you know, Manuel Noriega Pineapple Face. He hates that shit. Thing is, though, is that Taser isn't a bad title, right? It's not a bad title. It's the all-seeing eye of Rant. It's like a job title. Put it on a business card. Taser business cards. And somebody was talking about picking up a domain name and actually creating a Taser fan site for Sim, which is just, you know, where it's at. That's an excellent idea. And if you come into Second Life, you can help us, you know, stalk Sim and question his idea of reality. He'll, like, you know, be go home one day, gets knocked out, and he wakes up, it's like, dun-dun-dun, who are you? You are Taser. I am not Taser. I am a free man. You know, that's what we're going for here. So if we can village his ass, that will be okay. Hey, let's get into some other feedback. Hey, Sean! Last show, you asked what it means to be broadcasting on 6673.3 kilohertz. This is what I usually say after the Second Life goes, because we're always simulcast on the old 99, transmitting on a frequency of 6673.3 kilohertz. And last show with Samarian, I'm like, what the fuck does that mean? I don't even know what that means. You give me this stuff to say, I'm so disconnected, oh my god, you wind me up before the show, take the mask off, put me at the microphone, and I'm like, oh my god, what are you doing to me, Sim? But no, you know, so we got this. So we threw it out to server, of course, responds. Dear Sean, last show, you asked what it means for us to be broadcasting on 6673.3 kilohertz. What does that mean? And also, if you could pick up shortwave radio and tune in. Well, we are a micro-broadcaster. Awesome. With an AM transmitter using 2 to 10 watts, we are transmitting on an abandoned aeronautical communications frequency that is in between two of the legal shortwave broadcast bands. A band is just a group of frequencies. One band ends at the 6300 kilohertz, and the other one starts at 7100 kilohertz. Unfortunately, cheap shortwave radios can't pick it up because they only receive frequencies within legal broadcast bands. A more functional shortwave radio is needed, which would be advertised as having continuous shortwave coverage, as opposed to cheap radios, which are advertising 14 shortwave bands. Since we use micropower levels, as opposed to the multi-megawatt transmitters used by commercial broadcasters, our ranges and signal are significantly lower, and probably be best described as having a Midwest regional coverage rather than worldwide. However, you know, on a good night, with a bit of skip, you know, you could probably get it out there. A very good solution for someone who doesn't want to invest in shortwave radio is a Shoutcast radio stream maintained by well-known pirate listener in Michigan. It's a very nice shortwave receiver with a huge antenna streaming out into his Shoutcast station. It'd be found here at Shortwave Pirate WordPress, The Gulch. There's a big, I guess it's The Gulch. You can also fire Pirate Week on Twitter updates for when he hears pirates on the air, so you don't have to sit listening to the static. Just want to let you know that we're indeed broadcasting to the world of SKTSM and Taser! And he said some other stuff too, but I'm not going to read that. That laughing man. Thank you very much. Oh, I also, I'm in Second Life every week for a show called Owie Neximus. Okay? And my DJ and a few others from Radio 99 are also in Second Life as Nomad and DJ Dolly. Well, they're all sitting here in the show tonight. Isn't that nice that you came to my show and I don't go to your show? That's because I'm an arrogant, self-righteous prick, and don't you forget it. Everybody's got to have one of those. Anyway, into the news in backhacked UAV news. Now, I'm going to thank Outsider for it because he was first, okay? But, oh my God, did the internet ever send me this story? Oh, boy. Server, I have heard you. Please stop sending it. Oh, my God. Militants in Iraq have used a $26 off-the-shelf software to intercept live video feeds, from U.S. Predator drones. You know, the combat planes flying around, you know, autonomous. Potentially, providing them with information they need to evade or monitor U.S. military operations. Yeah, if they're looking through your cameras, they can see it. Senior defense and intelligence officials said Iranian-backed insurgents intercepted the video feeds by taking advantage of an unprotected communications link in some of the remote flow planes' systems. She-8 figures in Iraq use software programs such as Skygrabber, available for as little as $25.95 on the internet, to regularly capture drone feeds, according to a person familiar with reports on the matter. U.S. officials say there's no evidence that that militants were able to take control of the drones or otherwise interfere with their flights. Still, the intercept could give American enemies of the battlefield advantages by removing the element of surprise from certain missions, making it easier for insurgents to determine which roads and buildings are under U.S. surveillance, which, yeah, would sound to be reason. The drone intercepts mark the emergence of a shadow cyber war within the U.S.-led conflict overseas. They also point to the potentially serious vulnerability in Washington's growing network of unmanned drones, which become the American weapon of choice in both Afghanistan and Pakistan. Okay. Are we at war with Pakistan? Did we go to war with Pakistan when I wasn't looking? You guys. Obama, you're not supposed to be doing that. What the hell? The Obama administration has come to rely heavily on the unmanned drones because they allow U.S. to safely monitor and stalk insurgent target areas in areas where sending American troops would either be politically untenable or too risky. The stolen video feeds also indicate U.S. adversaries continue to find simple ways of counteracting sophisticated American military technologies. U.S. military personnel in Iraq discovered the problem late last year when they apprehended a Shiite militant whose laptop contained files from the intercepted drone video feeds. In July, the U.S. military found pirated drone feeds on other militant laptops, leading some officials to conclude that militant groups trained and funded by Iran were regularly intercepting feeds. You like that whole spin there where they brought Iran into the mix? Do you like that? That's a good go. Intelligence reporter Siboan Gorman discusses how hackers were able to gain access to U.S. military drones, what type of information insurgents accessed. In the summer of 2009 incident, the military found days and days and hours of proof that feeds were being intercepted and shared with multiple extremist groups. It's part of their kit now, quote unquote. A senior defense official said that James Clapper, the Pentagon's chief intelligence officer, assessed the Iraq intercepts at the direction of Defense Secretary Robert Gates and concluded they represented a shortcoming to the security of the drone network. Oh, you think? Really? They ought to, like, shoot these guys. Are you joking me? You didn't think to encrypt that? Really? Like, really? You know? You don't even have to be, like, smart to know to do that. Like, a child would know that. What the hell? Who dropped the ball there? Is it that big of a deal to encrypt it? I'm like, my God. Well, I guess that's how they're rolling, you know. Hey, it levels the playing field a bit, I suppose. But that's kind of not the point of weapons, is it? I mean, you know, I just cannot believe that they would broadcast something like that in the clear. Like, holy crap. So, to follow up that horrible story, thank you very much to... who sent in that story? Who gave me that? That was Outsider, thank you. And the rest of the internet who gave me that. Now on to a wonderful story sent in by DC. Thank you very much. In Gimme the Star Cruiser News. Now, every now and again you come across a little gem like this on the internet, which clearly gives you hope. Or at least that's what the new press release from UFO guru Luke Fortune claims. Fortune, an inventor, has put the plans and patents to allow you to build your own laser fusion-powered UFO online for free. Prototype will cost about $60,000 for you to build, but don't worry, soon building your own UFO will be dirt cheap and everybody on the planet will be flying them, according to Fortune's press release. And this will transform the world's economy. Okay, check it out. The government-approved public charity to develop UFO technology is underway. Oh, so he's got a charity to do it. Imagine a tomorrow where instead of your usual hand-drum job, you, the average Joe, were flying above the planet thousands of miles per hour without danger, hauling cargo or people. The average Joe can build a flying craft for about the cost of a car. Instead of driving a taxi, average Joe flies people all over the planet, all over the solar system. The cruise industries find great profits in tours around the moon and outer giants. Resources no longer need to be a problem as mining the asteroid belt becomes a commonplace event. Shooting galleries can be opened in the Kuiper Belt. Oil prospecting on Jupiter's moons could likewise easily be achieved. The open use of these technologies will repair the global economy by opening the next great economic growth. Space tourism can be a reality in a much shorter time. as people who aren't millionaires realize that they can build these devices and cash in on the space tourism trade. You can become wealthy by taking part of the next economic expansion. For you, for all of us, science fiction will become science fact. And it goes on, you know, talking about how he's going to build UFOs, which I'm very excited about this. Now, it's hard. I know you're like me. You know, you're cynical, right? You know, sounds a little too good to be true. But apparently this cat's going to be building UFOs for 60 grand a crack. So I promise you, with that dude like up in Alaska building the Mecca, everybody knows about the guy in Alaska building the Mecca. Yeah, everybody knows him. So with that guy up there spending money to do that, I mean, hey, you know, somebody's going to build one of these things. And if they, yeah, just for a little while, I'd like to pretend, what if that was the case? Wouldn't that be just the best? we'd never see it. It gets squashed probably, but, you know, just for a little bit, wouldn't it be great to just kind of wish that maybe the neighbor, you'd never build one, of course, but, you know, the neighbor would build it, and then he'd, like, get you the keys and tell you where it is. You'd have to go find it. Great book idea there. Good book idea. And speaking of book ideas, in Afternow news. This is an interesting, in the Afternow, of course, certain electronics are illegal, right? Weaponized electronics. Well, that's now a reality. The Cuban government has arrested an American citizen working under contract for the United States Agency for International Development who is distributing cell phones and laptop computers to Cuban activists, a State Department officials and congressional sources said on Saturday. The contractor, who has not been identified, works with the Bethesda-based Development Alternatives, the company said in a statement that was awarded a government contract last year to help USAID support the rule of law and human rights, political competition, and consensus building in Cuba. Consular officers with the U.S. interest section in Havana, the capital, are seeking access to the contractor who was arrested December 5th, and charges have not been made public. Under Cuban law, however, a Cuban citizen or a foreign visitor can be arrested for nearly anything under the claim of dangerousness. It's dangerous. Charge of dangerousness. That's a good word, eh? Dangerousness? I like that one. The detention of an American contractor working for the U.S. government may raise tensions between the Castro brothers' communist government in Cuba and the Obama administration, which has been taking a go-slow approach to improving relations with the island. The new U.S. policy stresses that if Cuba takes concrete steps, such as freeing political prisoners and creating more space for opposition, the United States will reciprocate. A senior Republican congressional aide said the American contractor is being held in a secure facility in Havana, smoking cigars. It's bizarre. They're just holding him, not letting us see him at all. Maybe he's dead, said the aide, who was not authorized to speak on the record. Attempts to reach Cuban government officials discuss the case were unsuccessful. Cell phones and laptops are legal in Cuba, though they are new and coveted commodities in a country with an average worker's wage is $15 a month. The Cuban government granted ordinary citizens the right to buy cell phones just last year, and they are mostly used for texting because the 15-minute phone conversation would eat up a day's wages. Internet use is extremely limited on the island. It is available in expensive hotels where foreign visitors stay, and some government facilities such as universities. Cubans who want to log on often have to give their names to the government, according to some websites are restricted. A person familiar with the detained American's activity said he was working with local organizations that were trying to connect with each other to get connected to the internet and a country and connect with the affinity groups in the United States. So, trying to wire up Cuba, trying to put people online, and oh yeah, disseminating free use of information. Not such a good idea. Not a good idea. You know, so we're going to, like, control that so that you can't have access because, you know, stupid people are easy to control. And that's the truth. It should come as no surprise that the Cuban regime would lock up an American for distributing communications equipment, said big crazy name here. A Cuban-American at the top Republican at the House of Foreign Affairs Committee. What is that? Ilena Ross Levin from Florida? Is that Rep? Like, they got their names are nuts. The detention of an American in Cuba is rare. The handful of U.S. citizens behind bars in Cuba are there for crimes such as drug smuggling, said Gloria Burbena, the press officer for the U.S. interest section in Havana. An activity that in any other open society would be legal, giving away free cell phones in Cuba is a crime, said Jose Miguel Vervesio, director of America's Program for Human Rights Watch. The group recently issued a critical report on freedoms in Cuba called New Castro, Same Cuba, with reference to installing Raul Castro as president in place of his ailing and older brother, Fidel. So that's a really good idea. I didn't even know they did that in Cuba. Sounds like Cuba kind of sucks, though, hey? Like, doesn't it? I mean, you know, they're not able to have cell phones. They're not able to talk to anybody. I guess you can go there with a bunch of netbooks and probably be king of the world. But, you know, I guess that's how it rolls. If you're in Cuba, man, not a good thing. So be happy with your connectivity that you have because, well, probably going to lose it. In HARP news. Now, this is great. I love this one. This is another one of those good stories. Goes well with the UFO story earlier. This one was sent in by Delicatus in 2012. Now, for those of you who don't know, Obama got the Nobel Peace Prize. And just when that happened in Norway, there was this crazy bright light in the sky. Looked a lot like a missile to me that might have been spiraling off. But then there was this blue beam or whatever. I'm not really too sure what's going on. There's a bunch of theories. Following a cross-volley of the interpretations, this is on December 9th, 2009, blue-green light vortex over Norway on the eve of Barack Obama's Nobel Prize acceptance speech. Two researchers have independently posted that HARP, a space-based weapon of mass destruction whose antenna field is close to the site of the Norwegian spiral light. According to one of the researchers, David Wilcock, one of his confidential sources stated that Norway's spiral light was part of the Project Bluebeam. Mr. Wilcock's interview appears at the Project Camelot radio show with Carrie Cassidy. One of the alleged purposes of Project Bluebeam is the use of advanced electromagnetic imaging, such as that produced by HARP and exhibited in the Norway spiral light, as a psychological mass conditioning device in aid of implementation of the global corporate New World Order. Ha ha! Global corporate New World Order. If this analysis is accurate, the Norwegian light may have been a HARP-induced effect attempting to anchor an extraterrestrial-like transdescent aura around the U.S. President Barack Obama's Nobel Prize. Well, you gotta say, though, on the eve of the Nobel Prize, I guess, and he gets this big light in the sky over Norway, it is kind of a bit weird. I mean, even if it was a missile, why would you do that with the president going there? Like, what are you doing? If this analysis is accurate, the Norwegian light may have been a HARP-induced effect attempting to anchor the extraterrestrial or transcendent. Isn't that interesting how they say the extraterrestrial or transcendent? Extraterrestrials are not transcendent. I'm sorry, we don't know that. We haven't met them. And apparently, they like to cut up our cows. Apparently. Now, personally, I don't think this is what HARP is for. You know, they go on and they talk about the electromagnetic purposes of HARP, and I don't think that's what HARP's all about. See, I've got a theory on this. I do. A theory on what HARP's all about. See, now, if you think about it, back prior to the Second World War, the occult stuff was really all the rage. Spirits, mediums, you know, guys like Houdini would go around debunking all these guys, right? But here's what I think happened. See, the Nazis were really into the occult, too. So what I think happened is that Americans discovered, after the Second World War, that the Nazis really had discovered some kind of occult power and wizardry. Right? And that's what I talk about in my books, where I talk about Virexology and Vertometry, you know, in The Bloodstained Rabbit and The Skype Wings of Abaddon. Now, here's the key. What I think HARP is it's not a broadcast array. No. It is a sensor array so that they can track paranormal energies around the world. Huh? Huh? Come on, it's pretty good. That's a pretty good one. I don't think anyone's written a book like that yet. If they have, please send it to me. I'd like to read it. Because I think that's a pretty good spin. I could put a good spin on that. Probably, you know, write a few stories about it. It'd be pretty all right. I think people read them. Probably be fun. Never know. Never know. Never know until you try. In my hometown! Well, now, this is great. Okay, this is absolutely hideous. The city of Vancouver. Now, I am, like, here. Ding! Google Maps. Big image. There's me in the middle of the street. Okay? The city of Vancouver has ordered the removal of a mural hanging outside a downtown East Side gallery depicting the Olympic rings as four sad faces and one smiley face. Period. Full stop. New sentence. The gallery says in 10 years, it has never before been asked to remove any artwork. Now, at this point, I would like you to do a Google image search or a Bing image search, or some kind of image search, on the, what would that be, Maine and Hastings? Why don't you do a on Vancouver, British Columbia, Hastings, and Maine? Okay, that is what the downtown East Side looks like. Okay? Nobody's going there to buy art. Okay? It's basically Scumtown. Pretty much. It's pretty much the ghetto of Vancouver. That whole, you know, Michael Moore movie where he's like, this is a Canadian ghetto. No. You are, in fact, inaccurate. All right, you need to go down and take a look there. But anyway, I guess not even in the worst section of town, you can have an art gallery that has a bad picture of four Olympic rings as four sad smiley faces and one, you know, like, well, you know, to be fair, I guess it goes against the religion of the Olympics, right? That's blasphemy, clearly, and the Church of the New God has decreed that it must be taken down, and they will, using the exact same techniques as Scientology does, exactly the same, no difference. The city issued an order under its graffiti bylaw, oh good, that'll work, which comes in the wake of a debate over a controversial city sign bylaw that opponents feared would allow officials to stifle anti-Olympic expression. It was pretty clear to me that it was because of the context of the work, says Collie Helson, who runs The Crying Room, a small studio focused on emerging artists. It's a great title. Miss Helson points out that over the years, she has hung about 30 murals there. She's never had any trouble. She's also used the space as a giant chalkboard, allowing passersby to write or draw whatever they wanted, including swear words, and has never asked to remove that either. In fact, when her landlord, Peter Wong, received the notice from the city telling him to remove the graffiti from his building, he had no idea what they were talking about. I called him and said, I cannot find the graffiti. And then they said, the mural is graffiti. The mural? This surprised him because the murals have been up for years. He had never heard from the city before. The mural, black paint on varnished wood, may look grittier than other works that may have hung in the front of the gallery in the past. But the artist, Jesse Corin, says that he has no doubt the order is to be taken down because of a misunderstanding between the because of its anti-Olympic content. I think that this was very careful to try and just term it as graffiti. Let's be honest. It's on the front of a gallery that has a rotating series of art pieces, so I think it's just the kind of terminology they have used to avoid it seeming like it being removed because of the Olympics. Vancouver spokesperson Theresa Beer says the city inspector viewed the work as graffiti, not a mural, noting black graffiti tags on wood paneling covered a window. It has nothing to do with content. While its removal has ordered the city's graffiti bylaw, a sign bylaw in Vancouver has faced heavy criticism. First passed in July, it was accused of stifling debate by giving police and city officials broad power to seize signs and placards, with one civil libertarian saying that it was at risk of becoming Beijing 2.0. The law was revisited last month to apply only to commercial signs, with Mayor Gregor Robertson saying the city's commitment has always been the protection of people's charters of rights and freedoms. Unless it's the Olympics, in which case we don't give a shit. Mr. Hessen removed the mural on November 16th, complying because she likes to rotate the art there anyway. The work has been up since September 25th, and she also didn't want to cause Mr. Wong any grief, as he allows her to install murals without restrictions. A great freedom, she says, for someone running a gallery with no funding. The mural is unquestionably an anti-Olympic statement. Mr. Kirkoran, who works at a homeless shelter, feels that the Olympics have not served marginalized people of the downtown East Side well. He is upset that some of the key gathering places for homeless people, such as Oppenheimer Park, have been shut down for pre-Olympic renovations. The oppressive nature of the games is what I wanted to capture, and how the majority of the people are suffering for the minority. And for everyday Vancouverites like himself, Mr. Corn says the games are simply inaccessible, which is totally true. I mean, it couldn't be more true, okay? It's ridiculous. It's totally, totally ridiculous. I live in Vancouver, and I pay taxes, and I'm not going to be able to go to the Olympics. I can't afford to go to the Olympics. So basically, it's a lot of people's backs, like the taxpayers of British Columbia. The Olympics are being staged, and it's not really for us. I find that frustrating, and I think there's a lot of issues that should be dealt with before we have to worry about increasing our ability to host sports events. Patrick Smith, director of the Simon Fraser Institute of Governance Studies, said the removal of a sign is a symptomatic of the high demands of the Olympic movement places on host cities. He believes Vancouver will be the beginning of a shift away from the modern Olympic era, with communities saying the cost of the hosting is too high. A lot is asked of the communities, and it seems to me this is a perfectly good example of where we've gone too far. There is no other way to describe it other than overreaction, but it's the city trying to protect a brand that's not the city's brand. It's the Olympic movement's brand. is the latest in a series of cases where the Olympic interests have trumped Canadian or local interests, he argues, citing other examples such as the recent court ruling that Canadian women's ski jumpers couldn't claim a spot in the Games under the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, or a new BC law that allows police to force homeless people into shelters in severe weather. Civil Libertarian argues that such a law is simply a tool to sweep Vancouver's homeless problem under the rug during the Games. I think the city has a kind of caved into the whole series of events here, said Professor Smith, also a past chair of SFSU's Department of Political Science. It, the Olympic movement, dictates an awful lot to local citizens. It's not as if the event isn't interesting and doesn't grab the attention of people around the world, but the Olympic movement goes too far and asks for too much. And it's true. It's true. It totally does. I mean, you go down into Vancouver now. I'm dreading it. They're going to take the whole city hostage for 2 weeks. That's what they do. You know, it's going to be ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. But, you know, that's why if you think you have rights, that's the greatest thing in the world, you know. Maybe that's why there was the Nuremberg trials. Maybe that's why they had, you know, war crimes and they thought all that stuff up. It wasn't to actually stop war crimes. It was just to sucker the rest of us into accepting government again. Because after governments give you something like death camps, how can you possibly trust them again? Like, if that's what a government can do, why have one? You know, really. So what they do is they give you these things that they call charters, rights, and freedoms, right? Now, of course, the U.S. Constitution was written long before them, and it's an ideal, and I think it's a good one. I think it's a good idea. But, you know, of course, now all the laws are kind of going against the U.S. Constitution, even in the constitutional United States. The media's got it all beat to hell. So there's nothing sacred anymore, and, you know, everything's basically falling apart, which is kind of sad that, you know, the culture is going to dissolve. Pretty crappy. But another symptom of this, you know, the illusion of rights, right? It's like laws. They can only keep the laws they can enforce. You can only have the rights you can maintain, really. If you can't maintain those rights, how do you expect to keep them, you know? For example, I give you some beaten writer news. Peter Watts, the critically acclaimed Canadian author of Blindsight and other dystopian novels, entered a dystopia of his own Tuesday after border guards beat and pepper sprayed him at the U.S.-Canadian border. Now you can help with his legal defense. Over at Boing Boing, Cory Doctorow has a full account of what happened, but Watts was returning to Canada via the Michigan border after helping his friend move house in Nebraska. Goes to Nebraska, helps his buddy move. After border guards asked to search his car, Watts got out of the vehicle and questioned what they were doing. So they're conducting a search. He goes, "What are you doing?" And moves in. Immediately was pepper sprayed, handcuffed, and placed under arrest. Yeah. Witnesses in the car with him said he did nothing more than question the guards. He did not attempt to attack them. Nevertheless, he's been charged with a felony assault against a federal officer. So, you know, the officers did something. He said, "What are you doing?" They maced him. This is the story that's going on. I find it pretty hard to believe you say, "What are you doing?" And the guy pulls out the mace and hits him with it. I don't think that's really what happened there. That doesn't sound right. I'd like to see the tapes on that. But that said, you know, yeah, I think that this was probably somebody got a little excited here, and it has a really bad ending on this. But anyway, while Watts was being detained, Doctorow called Cindy Coam, a legal director of the Electronic Frontier Foundation. She called her contacts in Michigan and luckily got help from a civil rights lawyer there who got Watts released the next day. He's safe at home now, but still faces felony charges that could land him in jail for 2 years and prevent his crossing back into the United States ever again. Well, I mean, you know, that's just goes to show ya. When the guys with the guns show up, you better do as they say. Don't try reading Miranda to them because they're not interested, okay? Essentially, with the guys with the guns are there, you're now sort of a prisoner. And, you know, that's how you can generally tell the difference throughout history of the people who are the you know, the slaves, you know. And then there's the people who are the masters, you know, because the people with the masters, the master guys, they're the ones with guns. You see, that's how that works. If you don't have any guns, you're part of the slave bunch, you know, over there. And if you have guns, that means you can be part of the masters. So it's a good idea, you know. Own a gun. Hey, maybe. Just something to think about. Nothing wrong with trying to own a gun, I don't think. whatever. So we got some Cyberpunk kit for you today, which I think is probably one of the better pieces of Cyberpunk kit to come out in a while. This is a neat one here. A 3D bioprinter, first commercial 3D bioprinter, makes human tissue and organs. So you print out an organ, which, of course, conjures images of the fifth element. Eventech, an innovator of new product development and custom automation for the biomedical, industrial, and consumer markets today, announced it has delivered the world's first production model of a 3D bioprinter to Organovo, developers of the proprietary Novogen bioprinting technology. Organovo will supply the units to researchers, institutions investigating human tissue repair and organ replacement. Dr. Fred Davis, president of Eventech, which has offices in San Diego and Melbourne, said that building human organs cell by cell was considered a science fiction not that long ago. Although this clever combination of technology and science, we have helped Organovo develop an instrument that will improve people's lives, making the regenerative medicine that Organovo provides, Organovo, man, it's a hard one, accessible to people around the world. The first conventional 3D bioprinter makes human tissue and organs. Awesome! So let me get this straight. After I figure out how to do modifications and, you know, if I want to make some cybernetic stuff and kind of rework my arm a little bit, you know what I mean here? If my arm is just a bit wider, we can just, you know, I'll print up a new arm. I could cut off my old arm, put the new arm on, and if I screw that, don't worry, I can print out another one. I've got arm 4.5. Keith Murphy, CEO of Organovo, based in San Diego. San Diego Organovo, what can we print for you? Said the units represent a breakthrough because they will provide, for the first time, flexible technology platform for organizations to work on the many different types of tissue construction and organ replacement. Scientists and engineers can use the 3D bioprinters to enable placing cells on almost any type of desired pattern in 3D. Researchers can place liver cells or on a perforated scaffold, support kidney cells with co-printed scaffold, blah, blah, blah. Very good idea. I think it's a neat idea to be able to print out organs, because, you know, organs are important. It's important to have organs. It's a good idea. You know, you should keep those around, and you should do things that help you look after your organs, which is, this is kind of, you know, the Christmas sort of special here. I should bring up a point. See, now, in about 3 weeks, your environment is going to be completely filled with annoyingly tanned fit people. And they will be yelling at you that you are a fat slob. I hate this part of the year. This is one of the problems with Christmas, you see. It's because October, what do? They give out candy to children. And they dress up in costumes, which is great fun. I love Halloween. Halloween is awesome. And then you've got, like, the cold months where you can't go outside, do everything. So what do? They sell you a bunch of sweet stuffs. There's absolutely no mention of fitness. No mention of fitness anywhere right now, because right now is the feed section where they're fattening up the consumer. Where's the fitness ads? Where's the TV ads? You got obesity is an epidemic in North America, okay? Obesity is everywhere. And where are the fitness ads now? We don't need them in the new year for the marketing campaigns to make us feel bad because we feel good now. We don't need those now. What we need now is somebody to say, no, don't spend your money. Well, the economy will fuck the economy. Fuck the economy. Is the economy going to feed me? No, I'm saving my money. That's what I'm doing. Okay, dollars are the ammunition of tomorrow. Don't buy bullets. Keep the money. Seriously, dollars are where it's at. I'm not talking the U.S. currency now. I'm just saying money. Hang on to it. It's valuable. Don't let yourself get sucked in with a lot of this Christmas bullshit that's going on. Peace on Earth? Love it. Getting together in groups? You know it. Santa Claus? Think he's a fat guy. Love that stuff. Christmas stockings, little things you can pick up at, like, I don't know, a dollar store, whatever. Good stuff. Christmas trees? Love them. Okay, love them. Think they're great. Love it. Make your own stuff. There's tons of ways to celebrate Christmas where you don't have to go out and spend a whole bunch of cash. You know what I mean? You should, if you're going to buy presents, buy one present. Just buy one present for someone. You know, that's it. And get your love out of that. Rather than spending, you know, $1,000 on 50 people and getting everybody a stupid piece of trash, I'd rather spend $1,000 on one person and get them something that they will have for the rest of their lives. You know what I'm saying? But, I mean, honestly, really, the best thing to do is save your cash, man. That's what it's all about. And you're not going to see it now, are you? You're not going to see that one tiny iota. No, what they're going to do is they're going to hit you now with tons and tons of sweets, right? Chocolate bars, oh yeah, Christmas cake, large, luscious, you know, sweeping gravy over mashed potatoes. That'll fill your image sensors for the next little while. And then, booyah, the minute January hits, it's going to be like, you fat bastard, you scum. How dare you have had fun at Christmas? Now you must work it off. Look at our flat bellies with our little cheese graters on them. We are underwear models and you are not. We will never know the joyous taste of ice cream, but we are underwear models. You know, seriously. Seriously. That is what is going on there. So it upsets me right now. So I'm here on Newsreel telling you right now, don't eat the fatty food. Seriously. Stay away from that shit. I mean, you know what? If you go to the big dinner, you know, everybody's got a dinner. If you're lucky enough to have a dinner, go have one. Eat your face off at the dinner, okay? Christmas dinner, and making a big statement like, I'm going to be vegan at the Christmas dinner, not really going to help your cause, all right? You're not winning allies there. Don't be like that kind of stuff. Yeah, suck it up. Have a good time. But the day before and the day after, you know, you got to make sure that all that other time, that isn't like a license to just go off the hook and eat chocolate every day. Mind you, at the end of the show tonight, I'm looking quite forward to eating one of the ice cream bars that I purchased from my local M&M meat shops. Yes, and if you like ice cream bars, the chocolate-covered vanilla ice cream bars from M&M meat shops are actually made of Wynn and dipped in awesome. They are... the shiznizzle. And they're pretty cheap. They're about as good. I think they're better, really, than Haagen-Dazs ice cream bars. You know, I'm just saying. But other than those Haagen-Dazs ice cream bars, and the ones that are better at M&M meat shops, seriously, like, don't eat the fatty food. Because you really shouldn't, you know. And I bought a box. So, you know, they're in the freezer now. But you shouldn't buy them. You know, I know. It's hard, right? It's Christmas. Come on. You want to get it dark. Everybody's bummed out. You want to have a big nom nom full of ice cream. Can't have that. Pain in the ass. All right, here we go. On to today's daily hack, a DIY book scanner. Now, this is a cool idea. I think it's a cool idea because it gives people the ability to turn a book into a digital format. As a writer, I think that, well, there goes my livelihood. But, I mean, on one level, you look at that, I don't think this would actually make that much of a difference. Really. And if it was a choice between me making money on it and having my information saved, I'd probably rather choose to have my information saved. But I'm weird like that, you know? And honestly, I'm not really worried about books being turned into a digital format, because if you ever tried to curl up and read with a laptop, sucks ass, okay? It's horrible. And let's not forget, books are hard currency, right? Y2K compliant right there, baby. Power goes out, my book still works. DIY book scanners. Is a commercial book scanners cost anywhere from $5,000 to $50,000. And I was reluctant to shell out the cash. I've always wanted one of these, and now I can build one for approximately $300. And that is today's daily hack, a DIY book scanner. Our community has developed a whole ecosystem of scanner designs ranging from the crude and expedient to a polished and highly sophisticated. We've also helped develop a document-free open-source software to post-process these images. Our members include programmers, mechanical engineers, historians, books lovers, copy fighters, and people who've never handled a soldering iron. Today, together, we're addressing the first part of the digital book's problem, the means of scanning. And we've only been at this since June of 2009. These scanners you see below were all deployed for a purpose. Some for documenting history, some for helping the disabled read, others to make space in book-cramped homes and to keep the peace in villages. Some just for fun. Very, very cool. And this is an outstanding Recomedia. It's a series of photographs. Now, I draw your attention to a region of the world that nobody gives a flying shit about. You know, I think we should cancel the Olympics this year. Cancel it. Okay? Write it all off. Take the money that we were going to spend in 10 days running around in circles, jumping up and down. That's what you're doing. You're running around in circles, and jumping up and down, spending millions and millions of dollars, all based upon running around in circles and jumping up and down. So that's what the Olympics are all about. So instead of doing that, why don't we try to fix Africa with that money, just a little area of it? You know, why don't we try to, like, not, you know, try to improve some people's lives? But anyway, I digress. In Africa, there's a way they used to kill people called neck lacing. And what they do is they take a guy or a person, right, that they don't like, and they put a tire around them, and they douse it in diesel in the tire. Then they light the tire on fire. Of course, the diesel ignites the tire. It all is around your neck, of course, which, you know, bad for the skin. Very bad for the skin. So, you know, not really the most pleasant way to check somebody out. However, for inanimate objects, I'm a big fan. And so are the people of Gatso. And I believe this is in England. And what they're doing... Okay, think about it now. You've got a tire and some diesel, very quick to deploy. They throw it over traffic cameras. Okay, so they throw the tire filled with diesel over the traffic camera, let her go. So they're necklacing traffic cameras in Gatso. And that's today's Recommedia. The vandalized Gatso section has been broken down into 4 pages of photos. This is due to the amount of time it takes to load all of the pictures, even with the broadband. At the end of each link, there's a link to show take you to the next page. This page is probably the highlight of the entire site. To my knowledge, this is the largest collection of wrecked Gatsos on the... Oh, pardon me, I'm wrong. Gatso is the is not an area. It's in England, I guess. Gatso is a name of the cameras are called Gatsos. My bad. Okay, so to my knowledge, the largest collection of wrecked Gatsos on the internet and growing rapidly. So long as cameras are robbing motorists of their cash, they will continue to be destroyed. 5 Gatsos have just gone up in Nuneaton. One of them was completely destroyed before it had even gone live. The workmen haven't even finished installing it. you gotta like that, hey? And then I don't know. I just there's something about that whole thing, you know, like necklacing traffic cameras. You know, that is a seriously cyberpunk. Yeah, I'm gonna take a picture from there, put it on the newsreel. That'll be the photo from newsreel. We'll burn out traffic cam. Awesome. And that's all I got for you today. But don't worry, I'll be back next week to make sure you get the news you need to survive. This has been a free podcast brought to you by the Wogs Who Care. If you cannot donate to newsreel, please distribute. If you can donate, please do so by clicking on the Donate tab on the Dark Atlas website. As well, please send an envelope, if you wish, to Box... not to a box, that would be wrong. To Rand Media Studios, Box 95089, 370 East Broadway, Vancouver, BC, Canada, V5T1W0. I want to thank the Army of the Flying Monkeys for assistance in gathering data. If you have information you'd like to send me, you can reach me at newsreel, N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L, at rantradio.com. Be sure to sign up for the Rant newsletter by sending an email to info@rantradio.com. And if you like the music in the background, always, big fan of Psytrance. And I need some more. If you know some good names, just the names of the bands now. All right, if you want to, I'd like to get some new Psytrance names. Don't send me songs, don't you know, whatever. You know, or if you wanted to send me, like, CDs of Psytrance music, that'd be cool. I get people sending me industrial CDs. I'd like some Psytrance CDs. So I put that the tail end of the show. You know, what the hell? So check out some Psytrance if you like it. And I'm going to fade out now with a track from Eric Idle, Fuck Christmas. Thank you very much. Remember, everyone, we will never defeat the enemy if we're at each other's throats. So until next time, that's what server said. End of line.
Fuck Christmas. It's a waste of fucking time. Fuck Santa. He's just out to get your dime. Fuck Holly and fuck Ivy and fuck all that mistletoe. White-bearded, big, fat bastards ringing bells wherever you go. And bloated men in shopping malls all going ho, ho, ho. It's fucking Christmas time again. Fuck Christmas. It's a fucking Disney show. Fuck reindeer. And all that fucking snow. Fuck carols and fuck Rudolph and his stupid fucking nose. fucking sleigh bells tinkling everywhere you fucking goes. Fuck stockings and fuck shopping, it just drives us all insane. Go tell the elves to fuck themselves, it's Christmas time again.
Sentimental bastards!